We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 289. Scott, is your head spinning from all of the winter meetings, reports, and rumors, and news, and everything that happened last week?
Well, it's kind of expected, right? You have a whole bunch of stuff that is rumored and talked about happening, and then, you know, you get some of the more low-key things that actually do happen, and a lot of the big names have not moved. I think that's pretty much reasonable. I think most people thought that was going to happen. It would be too easy if Machado and Harper were to sign during the winter meetings. Although you could say that Harper maybe he could have made a nice little splash being a Vegas kid, signing in Vegas, doing the whole Vegas thing. That would have been fun.
He could have done
him.
like a Mayweather entrance into the winter meetings and then said where he's going to be signing.
Yeah, it would have been great. Yeah, like a college prospect announcing the team. Yeah, putting the hats on. that would be ridiculous. That would be very LeBron-esque, taking my talents. I could totally see him doing it. I don't think
fans would be receptive to something like that. Baseball fans don't seem to have as much fun with that kind of stuff as basketball fans. Basketball fans got on LeBron when he did the decision.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we had some good things happen, I think. But the rest of it was just a lot of hot air spit, for sure. A lot of hot air spit at the winter meetings.
Well, I think once you get all of those reporters and people in the same room for long enough, you know, those casinos in Vegas, they just pump oxygen in there. There's no light. There's no natural sunlight coming in. People get kind of crazy. And eventually every rumor that could possibly happen will be floated on Twitter, and it will cause people to freak out.
Yeah, no, I would love to hear something down the line where the writers, and I know they did this whole little spoof on the mystery team and all that. I think Morosi was the one commenting on that one or doing like the lead for that little skit that they did. But it would be funny if we heard down the road that the writers just conspired behind the scenes 1 year and started floating all these bullshit rumors just to mess with Twitter.
I think some of them take a comment that maybe they heard from somebody, you know, a secondhand comment, and they turn it into clickbait articles. Yeah. I think that happens quite a bit.
Who's up now? Who needs credit on this one? Hey, right. Feinstein, have you had credit yet on a rumor? Not in the last 3 hours? All right, this one's yours.
Right, exactly. When was your last tweet? Okay, you can put this out and get the 5,000 retweets.
Yeah, so is there like a point guard amongst the writers, the guy who's distributing the tweets and the stories? There's someone behind the scenes is doing all that.
You think there's a puppet master?
I think there is a puppet. I wouldn't call it a puppet master, more of a point guard, you know, just throwing out dishes, making sure that everybody's fed, making sure that everybody has enough rumors under their name. And, you know, then you have the one guy who's like, well, I'm going to take another one and step in front and steal a pass or just do, you know, try to get as much attention as they possibly can. And then there's the couple guys that just get everything wrong, like Nightingale, just wrong every time.
So I had said, is your head spinning? But you want to know why my head is spinning today? It's because I did Jell-O shots last night for the first time since college.
Yeah, how was that? Did you eat like 50 of them before you felt anything, or did you learn from college and realize?
No,
that?
I learned from college. I think I stopped after like 4 or 5. Yeah. But yeah, you have the 4 or 5, and then an hour and a half later, you're like, ah, shit, I shouldn't have done that. Why am I such a moron every time?
I think the last time, well, we do them at football games occasionally, you know, for tailgates. Someone comes around with Jell-O shots, and, you know, I it's impossible for me to say no, but the last time we did Jell-O shots, like, and I did a lot of Jell-O shots, we went down rafting down a river. A whole bunch of us just kind of tied together.
These do not sound like environments for Jell-O shots. How do you get Jell-O shots at a rafting trip?
Oh, just wait for it. So it's genius, actually, and if anybody does a rafting trip, you should absolutely do this. First of all, you get a cooler tube. That's essential. You have to have the cooler tube, multiple cooler tubes usually. And the way you do the Jell-O shots is you get those little ketchup containers that they have at restaurants, the little containers that you can take away.
Oh, yeah, the little paper ones, yeah.
They're plastic with a lid on them. And what you do is you make the Jell-O shots in there. You put the lid on them, and then you can stack them. So you can make a ridiculous amount because you could stack them in your refrigerator. And and when you're on the river, you can throw them to people, and they float.
That's actually pretty awesome.
It's amazing. So yeah, so the Jell-O shots, that was probably the last time I had a ton of them was on the river.
Right, but they're a pain in the ass to make.
Yeah, it's whoever
well,
has to make them.
They're a pain in the ass when you're making dozens and dozens of them. We used to make hundreds upon hundreds of them for college parties.
Yeah, as an adult, when you realize that your refrigerator actually has some things in them still, and it's not just you could clear out, you know, a ton of it. It's it takes up a lot of room.
We used to just stack them in the backyard of our frat house because it's cold enough in the winter where you could just leave them outside.
Yeah, yeah. So the jello shots are good, man. You just got to. At this point, be a little smart about him in the beginning.
I was training my body for St. Patrick's Day weekend, which is when we're going to be down in Tampa for spring training. We decided.
Yeah, I like it. The 15th and the 16th of March. I didn't even realize it was going to be St. Patrick's Day until a couple people called that out. It was like, even better. That's great. The 15th is there's two games that weekend in Tampa. And the Friday game is against the Red Sox and the Saturday game is against the Blue Jays. We're going to be doing a group event up in the bullpen club again, similar to what we did last year. We had about 30, 35 people in the last one. It was a really last minute deal. But we're going to do pretty much the same thing. We're up top there and it's a one ticket cost. I don't have the exact cost of it, but you know, we just, whatever they charge us, we're going to charge everybody. And that's kind of how we're going to do it. But we'll get all the tickets and then distribute them out. But the ticket price includes an open bar for beer. It's basically domestic beers. And then they have a ton of food up there. So all of that is included in the cost, which is a really good deal. And then Friday, I'm still working on getting as many tickets as I can for that Red Sox game. But I will have, it's going to be that weekend for sure. And I will have all the ticket details this week and get them out to everybody so we can gobble them up.
Yeah. Last year we had, like you said, we had 40 people come to that Saturday day. There was a bachelor party there. So it was sort of like whoever was down there and saw that's a good deal. Let's all get together and watch the game. It's more about gathering all the people together rather than that's really the main focus.
Yeah, the game is there. It's happening. You're kind of taking it all in. You're just happy baseball's in front of you. I think that's really the premise of the whole deal. But it's a lot of fun. We got this scheduled a lot earlier than we did last year. So hopefully you guys can, you know, if you're planning to go to spring training and it works out. Mark down the 15th and 16th to go down there. And we'll throw around some, like last year, we all went out to eat afterwards and just did a bunch of stuff. We all hung out pretty much the entire weekend, the people that were down there. So we'll do a similar deal to that. In the, you know, we'll find a couple places. There's a couple breweries down there that we've been to that are good and do some meetups and stuff like that. So it should be a fun weekend.
Maybe we can scout the location of the new Tampa Stadium that got delayed and is now not coming until like the late 2020s.
It's not happening then either. I mean, I was surprised that they were as far along as they were in Ybor City, to tell you the truth. It just doesn't seem like, it seems like a cool area in Tampa, no doubt, but the logistics of it, it just didn't seem like, I don't know, the logistics getting in and out of that area for that stadium, it was going to cause problems. And it sounds like it did. But that also, and so that's spring training and then the BP crew events, we have the dates set, and we will have, again, these tickets available, probably this week as well. They're going to be on sale much earlier than even they were last year, but mark your calendars down for these. And we're going to do a deal for people who want season tickets as well for these individual games, April 13th, which is, against the White Sox, May 31st, which is a Friday game against the Red Sox. That's the Boston series. June 22nd, which is against Houston, the Astros, another good game. July 20th, which is against the Colorado Rockies. Thought that was a unique one. There aren't very many times you see the Rockies at Yankee Stadium. And then August 31st will be against Oakland. So some really good games and good series in there. Again, we have Section 205 locked down. So, you know, start making plans for these for these dates. Again, April 13th, May 31st, June 22nd, July 20th, and August 31st.
And the May 31st one is the only Friday game. That's the Boston game. And all the other ones are going to be Saturday. Like Scott said, it's far out right now. We're far in advance, so you can plan your trips to come.
Yeah.
Come to New York if you're coming from out of town. Or I mean, you can't even really buy individual game tickets.
You can't buy them yet. No, not for...
At this point.
Nope.
So
this is the only way you can get them.
It's going to be a quick... you're going to be on top. This could be a good maybe holiday gift for somebody.
That's right. And we're going to do a pregame for every single one of these. All the details are not set yet, but we're going to be doing pregames for every single one of them. So keep that in mind. And then also with every ticket price purchase for these games, you're now getting a hot dog and a domestic beer inside the stadium for the game too. So that's another really cool little perk that we've got going on for all of these games. And then again, you know, similar to what we did last year, I'm going to be designing a t-shirt for each event, and we may throw some additional like apparel gear or something else along to go with the ticket price for some of these games.
One more quick update before we get to all the topics. So we had teased the Joe Torre Curveballs Along the Way movie review that we already recorded. We said it was going to be this week. We lied. It's going to be next week. We realized with the winter meeting stuff, there's so much to talk about. And next Monday is Christmas Eve. And Scott, we're both going to be traveling, going to be with family. So it'll be, we're certainly going to do a regular episode and talk about any news that happened over the week. But it'll be a nice sort of little piece that we can tack on. People who can have more time to watch the movie, maybe do a rewatch of the movie if they liked it so much. I don't know if there's anyone out there who liked it that much, but hey, it'll be on next Monday's episode, Christmas Eve.
This is one of those good ones. Actually, you could get your family to watch it and you guys all have a good laugh at it and, right. And then relive the 1996 World Series in your own head. So,
and then watch the actual official 1996 World Series video if you want to watch
Boom.
Something.
This sounds like a great family night. Lots of beers and lots of Yankees around 1996. I like it.
All right. You ready to talk about winter meetings?
Let's do it.
So Cashman sort of spoke. He spoke a few different times. He pissed everyone off, and then he got everyone back on his side. So he pissed people off because he mentioned that, I can't believe you guys are still asking about the Bryce Harper thing. We don't have a fit in the outfield. It's not a realistic fit for us. We're not even thinking about Harper. And then a couple days later, he said that the Yankees are a fully operational Death Star, ready to strike, ready to blow up Alderaan. Or get blown up by Luke Skywalker. We don't know which one he was referring to, but regardless, people liked that quote.
It's so funny because this is such a Cashman, like, just trying to feed people and just give you something. the whole Evil Empire thing was thrown back and forth. What, last year when he called the Red Sox the new Evil Empire, and now we're going back to a Death Star, and half the people on Twitter or wherever is like, well, the Death Star blows up. Don't you realize that? The Death Star blows up. Well, it has a nice run. You know, the Death Star has a nice run. Not every baseball team is going to stay alive and keep their roster together forever. So essentially, you know, there was a little bit of a roster blow up, and now we're back. So he just threw out a nice little quote that everybody appreciated, I think.
I just feel like he was clicking through the channels and saw that TNT was running a Star Wars marathon like the day before. Yeah. And then he figured he'd throw that quote out the next day to the media.
Yeah, he was giving them a bite. I mean, that's what he was doing. He was throwing everybody a bone. He knows the J-Hap thing is okay, but J-Hap's boring. So let me throw a Death Star reference in here just to make everybody a little happier.
Well, he got serious blowback for his comments about Harper. People are pissed off. A lot of Yankees fans are going to be really, really pissed off if they don't walk out of this offseason with either Harper or Machado.
Yeah, and why? Because he's saying that he's not a fit. We have too many outfielders. I think that was the biggest phrase, is that we have too many outfielders. Our outfield is full.
And we already have six outfielders.
When you look at them, Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury are two of them that are taking up those spots in his mind. So yeah, that is what I think, you know, rub people the wrong way.
So Ellsbury, Gardner, Judge, obviously Hicks. He must be including Stanton in that outfielder list.
He's an outfielder.
And Clint Frazier?
Sure.
Is that the six?
I think Frazier is considered a major league player at this point. I mean, he's not like, he's in control of where he goes, I think, the way he plays.
But let's think about those six players. Ellsbury, we don't know if he's going to be able to actually physically walk on the field. Brett Gardner is certainly, I'd say, in his last year with the Yankees, and hopefully with decreased playing time, he can stay a little bit more durable this season. Clint Frazier is coming back from concussion issues all last season. It was a lost year for Clint Frazier. We hope he is healthy again, but you just don't friggin' know when it comes to brain injuries. And you got Judge and Hicks, so I understand on paper the six outfielders, but is it really? Can he really sit there and say, "Wow, that's it. We got our outfield locked up. We there is absolutely no fit for Harper."
No, but I think when you're talking about Harper, and you know, the first base rumors aside, because I don't think that's a realistic possibility.
He also shot those down.
Yeah, because it's not something you're going to do when you pay somebody $300+ million for 10 years. And you're going to slot them into a position they've never played. So it doesn't make any sense giving somebody that much money with such a huge unknown if that's the plan. And, you know, the outfield is full. It is. There's a lot of people there. And if you're going to sign a guy like this, you want to have a very nice open door and open spot for him to play. And even, you know, not talking about Gardner or Ellsbury, it's still a pretty loaded outfield. So you're going to have to do something, whether it's, you know, moving a guy, one guy playing full-time DH. There's going to be a log jam, even without talking about Gardner and Ellsbury. If Frazier is to come up, then there's a log jam. Or, you know, what if Frazier is hitting, but there's no spot. So he's in AAA, or are you going to trade him? Like, as the roster currently stands, it's a logjam to pay someone that much money for that long a time with not a natural fit.
You'd have to clear space. If you're going to pay him $300-ish million, you're going to have to do. He's not going to be battling for a spot. It's gonna,
right, exactly.
He's going to get a spot. So you're going to have to clear the space otherwise. But why do you think that Cashman was so quick to sign Gardner to a new contract? They did that in 2 days.
Yeah, that one baffles me. It really does. And, you know, I don't know if they had if they just didn't feel good about the rest of the outfield possibilities for in free agency, like the Michael Brantleys of the world. They didn't see that internally as an option.
McCutcheon, he ended up getting $50 million,
which
they
is crazy.
They were not going to pay $50 million for Andrew McCutcheon, nor did I want them to. But if Cashman had not picked up the option on Brett Gardner, which happened right after the World Series, why did he then need to re-sign him again? Why? Maybe he didn't want him testing free agency. Maybe he didn't want another team coming in and bidding up Gardner's price. But I don't know if that would have happened.
It seems like, yeah, I don't think it would have happened. But it seems like he wanted the sure thing, kind of what he did with CeCe. They have the guy that's there. And look, this could mean a couple things. One, they, from the beginning, never had any intention of going after Bryce Harper. He just wasn't on their list. They realized that if they're going to go after one of these guys, the more obvious fit right now, and certainly moving forward, is Manny Machado. It's very clear that that's the better fit for this team as far as position wise as well. And they just didn't like the rest of the free agents. So they decided that it's either going to be guys like Michael Brantley, or they're going to go after, you know, another outfielder free agent, or they're going to go with a known quantity, the longest tenured Yankee, and, you know, hopefully Frazier is coming back who can win that job. And then we have Brett Gardner as a platoon outfielder, which I think would be his best role this year. So it could just be a sign that what the Yankees were thinking ahead of these Machado, Harper, you know, rumors and such. They got their guy in Stanton last year, which is essentially the $300 million, you know, the big 10-year contract. They got that. Mm-hmm. Got that out of the way, and at a bargain, if you're thinking that these guys are going to get 300 plus, and now they're moving forward. So they made their choice, and it was Stanton. That could also mean that.
And there was reports that the Yankees are not willing to go up to $300 million for Machado, but they are having meetings with him this week. It's supposedly happening on Wednesday. I wonder if they're going to go to Taco Bell like they did with the Corbin.
It didn't work, so let's
hope it didn't work last time. Maybe switch it up, go to Popeyes. But if you are a GM, and Harper and Machado, who I both think are waiting for each other to sign, don't you think that? They're waiting for the other one to set the market. They don't want to be the first shoe to drop.
Well, yeah, I think it's more the agents definitely trying to not – they don't want to be the bar setter. They want to see where the other guy comes in and then use that contract.
They want to say, this guy got X dollars, so we want X dollars plus 10% or whatever.
Exactly.
But who would you rather pay for 10 years?
I would rather pay Machado. If I have a choice, you're putting me down and I have to sign one of these two guys, I would rather Machado.
I agree, and I'm curious if you think it's this, if we have the same reasoning. What's your reasoning?
I think he's more flexible. He can play different positions on the infield. I think third base is definitely his most long-term position. But if you are to sign him as a third baseman and you're going out there and signing him, then, you know, right now you have a guy who played third base who should have been rookie of the year, who's probably at his highest value that you're going to find. I mean, maybe he has a similar year next year and is a little bit better with the glove, but right now he's pretty peak value, and you can go out there and get another frontline starter. And I think, to me, like, if you're going to sign one of these guys, then there are pieces that you can move and still better your team at the same time.
I would rather sign him because in 2015, 162 games played. 2016, 157. 2018, 156 games. He plays. He doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
And Harper, the injury issues are a real factor. And when you're paying somebody $30-plus million, you don't want them sitting on the disabled list. You want them actually playing on the field.
Right. I get the whole right hand, left hand thing. Everybody is excited and they see a left handed bat with Bryce Harper and they start salivating and their eyes get huge because they see left handed bat, Yankee Stadium. The thing I think it's overrated to a point that the Yankees just set the major league record for home runs. And a lot of their power, if not most of their power, came from the right side. These guys can hit the ball the other way. They take advantage of the stadium. And that was the whole premise and the whole thing behind Harper as a left-handed bat. He'll play well at Yankee Stadium. He can take advantage of the stadium. Well, they have guys currently who are right-handed bats that also take advantage of the stadium. So I just think that's a little overblown as a major reason why to get Bryce Harper. Because if you're looking at defensively and where he's going to fit in, it's kind of messy. It's not a clear puzzle piece. Whereas Machado, even with Didi, you know, being out for whatever the time is in the beginning of the season, and hopefully he's back, he can slot into short and then move over to third if you needed to. So there's some, you know, position flexibility, I think, with Machado.
And people also complain about all the strikeouts, and Harper strikes out more than Machado does. Harper's strikeout rate in his career is about 21-22%, whereas Machado's like 15.5%.
Yeah, and we have a lot of guys who strike out quite a bit.
A lot of strikeouts, a lot of
home runs.
Yeah. Yes. So what did you think about these three-team rumored trade between the Yankees, Mets, and Marlins, with Syndergaard going to the Yankees, Realmuto going to the Mets, and then mystery prospects going to Miami, and also maybe Andujar going to either Miami or the Mets as well?
Yeah, I mean, Andujar was definitely in there from the I gave them zero chance of happening when I first saw them. They were fun. They were fun to talk about, but I just can't see the Yankees acquiring Noah Syndergaard from the Mets for any cost, honestly. I can't see that from the optic standpoint of the New York Mets to send a guy like Syndergaard over and the chance that, he's the one who puts them over the edge and they start winning championships because of a guy like Syndergaard. It would destroy the Mets fan. It would destroy the franchise. It would be like the final bullet, you know what I mean? Like the nail in the coffin. That's it. And I don't see them doing it. And I never did, but there were some great quotes out of this, the whole Derek Jeter or Marlin saying, "Hey, you better put Syndergaard in this trade so we can get him to the Yankees or there's no deal." Like, I love
as
that.
As if people still think Derek Jeter gives a shit about the Yankees. Yeah.
No, but it's great. That's a great line because it is, of course it's Derek Jeter saying, look,
yep,
Syndergaard's got to go to the Yankees or there's no deal.
Well, that's why he gave them Stan.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying he's our agent in the National League.
He's a double secret agent.
And it's not too secret at this point, but he's out there effectively championing the New York Yankees from afar. And I love it.
I have a theory that this whole trade was floated by Mets insiders that they wanted a storyline, a headline out there with Syndergaard going to the Yankees to show that they are willing to do anything. Van Wagenen comes in and he wants to set a precedent. I am a creative GM. I am not going to say no to anything. I would trade with the Yankees even if it means Syndergaard. And I truly believe they had no intention of actually doing that trade, but he wants that narrative out there.
No, I think, well, first of all, the narrative was there because it is confirmed that they had talked, right? Like, there's no doubt.
What does that mean? Hey, Brian. Hey, Brody.
Yeah, it could have been just that. But the point is that they talked. And I think that's a bigger deal than a lot of people realize. And I think that's what actually gave these a little bit more substance to some people than it normally would. Because, it was confirmed that they did speak. And that in and of itself, talking about trades and like having open communication is new. You know, the regimes just never really did that much. And I agree with you to a point where Van Wagenen coming in and saying, hey, I'm going to show them that it doesn't matter where you are. I'm trying to make my team better. And, you know, whatever team I need to trade with, unless it's a high contender in my division, then I'm going to do that. And it doesn't matter if it's the Yankees, because you know what? I don't care about the Yankees Mets thing. That's not a real thing for me. I'm just trying to make the Mets better. And I think that's part of it. I think that's one of the things that he's trying to say and to mark himself as different. Here's the difference though. Here's the difference. That's actually the same. It didn't happen. And are the Mets going to be the same thing? And they made this Robbie Cano deal. Is that going to be it? And the rest of it's just talk. That could be.
Could be. But I think if you're playing the game out, and if somehow the Mets wind up with Realmuto and Andujar, but have to trade Syndergaard, that does make them a better team.
I don't disagree with you, but I think at the same time, there's still the risk. It's not as much of a risk for the Yankees. If Andujar goes over there and does well, you know, it is what it is. But if Syndergaard were to come and put the Yankees over the top, that's a big difference, I think, for Mets fans and just the Mets world. Like,
but again, that's an optics thing. And
it is an optics thing, but it's a big deal for them.
I think Van Wagenen is trying to tell his Mets fans, I don't give a shit about optics. Right. I want to make the Mets better, and even if it means Syndergaard has to go. And Mets fans love Syndergaard. Yes. Thor, the long hair, he's a beast. I get it. But the reality is also, Syndergaard is very injury prone.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a risk to have on the Mets regardless for them. He's not DeGrom. You can't just bank on those 30-plus starts every year like they can with DeGrom. So there is an inherent risk with Syndergaard. Yes, he's filthy, and if he came to the Yankees, I would be ecstatic because and on any given day, he can be the best pitcher in baseball. But there is an injury risk with him.
There's no doubt an injury risk, and I do agree with you to the point where Van Wagenen is trying to say, I'll do anything. It doesn't matter if they're the Yankees. I'm going to make my team better. And we're going to push forward because, you know, there were other rumors talking about that, you know, maybe it was just a Mets pitcher and it could have been Wheeler. Maybe they were talking about Wheeler and maybe not Andujar. Maybe it was somebody else. So, you know, I think there's probably a very long leash of what actually happened and what was floated. But the story was that they were talking. I think that's the biggest thing.
Anytime there's headlines of Yankees and Mets trading, it literally takes over this sports, the sports radio, the sports narrative in New York City. It's crazy.
Because people, it's a polarizing thing. It's polarizing to the sense that there's good players being traded and they're in the same city. And Mets fans hate Yankees fans. And Yankees fans, like the majority of Yankees fans that I know, just they don't really care about the Mets. The Mets are just there and whatever, like the annoying little brother. But the Mets fans and the Mets, that whole world hates the Yankees. So the fact that they would send a really good player over and if that guy ever did well and helped them win a championship, it doesn't matter what the Mets did. They could win their division, go to the NLCS, and the Yankees would win the World Series, and Syndergaard's there. It would be a disaster.
It's true. And because I have a friend at work who's a Mets fan, we were talking about this trade, and he said he would rather Syndergaard blows out his ACL or his UCL and can't pitch anymore.
It's pathetic.
Than have him just be mediocre on the Yankees.
Right. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like, pitch to a 4.6 ERA on the Yankees. Nope, he'd still rather have Syndergaard just end his career.
Yep.
So also the Cleveland starters who we've been talking about, Kluber and Bauer, and then before Carrasco got his extension. But John Heyman tweeted out a couple days ago that after trading Encarnacion, Alonso, and Gomes, that the word is the Indians won't be as motivated by financial constraints to trade Kluber and Bauer anymore. Which is kind of, it makes sense because the Indians are going to win their division easily. That division is bad. Even if the White Sox sign Bryce Harper, they're not going to win their division. So the Indians get into a playoff series, and you can throw Kluber, Bauer, and Carrasco. If they're hot at the time, they can win. They can win the World Series with those three pitchers. So why are you going to give up on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, the fact that they have those pitchers and they're relatively good contracts, that didn't seem like – I think they were trying to – you know, see how they, if they could get blown away by anything. And if
someone was going to get dumb, yeah, if someone was going to be dumb, they would have gladly done it.
Right. Exactly. But it is weird when you see a team that, that still has the, you know, the majority of their core like that and still in an opportunity to win in a weak division, you know, start floating out the rumors of that, you know, that they're trying to shed payroll and, you know, their offense is going to be very different next year, but they still have some very good offensive players that are core guys. They haven't lost any of their core guys. And I think that's the biggest
thing. And they weren't going to trade any of their core guys.
Yeah. So I think they, at this point, you're right. I think that they're not going to be trading either one of these guys. I think they're ready to go. I think Bauer honestly would probably be, if someone were to come in with a prospect list of Bauer, like he'd be the guy that they would be more inclined to move.
Even though he's a lot younger than Kluber?
Yeah, but I think because of that, because I think at this point, I do think that, you know, they're going to get, they would probably get a better package as far as prospects for a guy like Bauer.
Yes, but if you're not, it's a tough situation for them because if you're trading one of those pitchers, you're almost saying we're not going to win now. So you take the prospects. But if you're going to trade one, why not trade both? You know, it's like, why keep one?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could still, you have a top two and you could still do damage, you know?
I guess.
They're trying to be competitive, I think. And if they're competitive and still hanging around, they don't have to win the whole thing to accomplish, I think, what Cleveland wants to accomplish.
They don't want to win a World Series. They just want to win 90 games.
A World Series would be nice, but it seems like they're, if they're so concerned about their finances that, you know, they're trying to stay in the green, and you know, they want to have a team out there that can do well enough where they can win their division and, you know, maybe make a run at that point. But I don't think you need all three of those guys to do that. I think they could do that with two.
Win their division. There's some people who have, I've read articles that say that there's more money for baseball teams in winning 88 to 90 games than trying to win the World Series every year.
Yeah, there's definitely that. There's if you have a competitive team and you can still put people in the seats, you know, during the season and late into the season, then you've essentially done your job. You don't have to win in the postseason as far as a bottom line perspective.
All right, so a couple other headlines that came from the winter meetings. I don't know if you want to spend any time on these, but the Yankees have talked to Boris about Kikuchi, who we had an email about a few weeks ago, and we had fun saying his name, so great. And then Rosenthal reported that the Red Sox are possibly looking to cut payroll because they were one of two teams, them and the Nationals, to go over the luxury tax this year, and Porcello might be on the trade block.
Yeah, that, I mean... That's fine. I feel like Porcello every other year is either good or you don't know what you're going to get from that guy. I think he's probably someone that's relatively expendable for them, but who the hell knows? I mean, I don't really believe it. I think that they, now that they signed Eovaldi like this for a 4-year deal, they're hoping that he's good for 1 year. and if he can, if they can get 1 year out of him and keep this run going, then it'd be worth it.
3 years for 1 year?
I think
kind of economics is that?
It's Dombrowski, dude. He goes for top
Dombrowski
heavy.
Dombrowski economics.
He does.
Just
he goes
about
top
today,
heavy. Yes.
Fuck
yes.
Tomorrow.
Yes. He goes top heavy. If I can get top heavy and I can win right now, then the rest of it will take care of itself. It doesn't matter as much. So yep. Yeah, I do think that they're much higher on him probably in the near term than they are the long term of that contract, even though it's a 4-year deal. But you know, I'll believe it when I see it. I have a hard time believing that the Red Sox are going to be cutting payroll.
Were there any Jedi mind tricks by Cashman, who all season him and Steinbrenner just kept talking about being financially responsible, getting under the luxury tax, and he kind of ingrained that into the Red Sox, and now they're willing to cut payroll?
Not at all.
Is any chicanery going on?
Nope, I don't believe that at all, because the Red Sox won the World Series, so it worked out for them the way that they did. Whatever, how they did it, it worked out for him. But the other thing, the Kikuchi thing, like at this point where the Yankees stand, and I still think people want some big moves. And if it's Machado, I do think that if Machado is signed, Andujar is going to be traded. It makes the most sense if you were to do that.
Do you think that brings down his trade value though? Well, signing Machado first, does that bring down his trade value?
You know, I think he's a wanted asset, so I don't think it would take it down much, because it's not like you're trying to trade him to one team. I mean, there would be multiple teams looking for a guy like Andujar, so I don't think it really affects it as much. Especially with Didi out too, you know, Cashman could play the narrative well.
He'll play shortstop,
and then Andujar might play first. Who knows? But I think there's things you could do with that. But that being said, if they were to do that and sign Machado and Andujar were dealt, like let's just play that scenario, then to me you're getting another pitcher, right? You're getting some, whether it's a you're getting another pitcher, and you'll figure out the rotation as the season comes about, and just kind of see what happens. If they don't do that, then I still think Cashman is trying to bolster this rotation. I don't think he's done with pitching. Now it's not necessarily a big Andujar trade piece, but Kikuchi is a move that I could absolutely see happening. It's a money move. Don't have to give much up. If internally they like the guy, I could absolutely see them signing him.
Yes.
I think it's a very low risk move.
Right. You're just eating the money.
You're eating money. Yeah, exactly.
So going back to the Andujar thing, Petriello from the StatCast podcast, who's been on our show, tweeted out that he does not believe a National League team would be willing to trade for Andujar. That's how bad his defense is.
Yeah, I don't believe that. I mean, I don't really believe that. I think Andujar is still a very young piece that can hit with anybody, you know, for a first year guy like that, the way that he hit and showed, you know, the bat control that he has, he's gonna be a very good hitter no matter what league he's in. And the defense, while it was not good last year, I do believe that he can be better. I think that he can absolutely fix it.
He can get better because he can't get worse.
To a point, he doesn't need... Right? Andrew Hart doesn't need to be a Gold Glove third baseman for him to be...
No, he needs to be average.
He needs to be an average third baseman. He needs to cut down on some of these errors. He needs to fix some of the mechanical things so that he's not looking egregious over there. Like, that's what needs to happen. And for him to cut down and be an average third baseman, absolutely he could do that.
If he was an average defensive third baseman, he would have had a 4+ win season this year, because that's the type of offensive season he had, which is very, very good. That's going to a next tier of players between a 2-win player and a 4-win player.
When you see a guy that comes out in his rookie year hit like Andujar did, to me, I'm looking at this guy, I'm like, he's just getting going. He's just getting going. When he gets more comfortable in the league, when he gets more comfortable
offensively too?
Yes, I do. I think he can.
See, I think we may have seen, and it, even if that is peak Andujar, but you can get more seasons like that, I think that's tremendous. He had an unbelievable offensive season. 855, I think, was his OPS, 47 doubles. Like, he didn't walk. That was the one issue offensively. He only walked 4% of the time.
And that comes with time and maturity. You're right. He puts a lot of bat to ball. I have a very difficult time seeing a guy like that who has got such bat control to not improve as he's going and be more comfortable and be more patient at the plate. Like, that's all going to make him better. It's all going to make him better. You know, if he's in there the entire year and he's got, you know, more padding in front of him and behind him in the lineup, also going to see more pitches. I don't think that I absolutely think that he can get better. I mean, as a rookie, when you show that much talent, you know, to me, there's really some upside there still.
So then the question is, why does it seem like the Yankees are so willing to trade him? Because his name keeps getting floated. Do you think the biggest reason is because Machado's out there? So they could trade him for assets like we just talked about, and then upgrade the position with Machado by just spending money? Or do you think there's something else internally where they're not sold on the player?
No, I think it's they see him as a peak value right now, and that he can go out there. They could use him to get a very major piece in a pitching rotation that is much needed. And yes, the fact that Machado is out there, and he's not the only one. I floated out an alternative option if they weren't to go after Machado, because I don't think they need to go after Machado. A lot of people think that the Yankees have to go out there and sign Bryce Harper and sign Manny Machado or Manny Machado, one of these two guys, because they're generational talents, and if you miss them, then that's on you.
Well, so those are also people who probably have not watched much Yankees baseball since 2009.
The thing is you need guys who can play together and be complementary players. You do not need superstars at every single position. The other alternative that I threw out there, if Andujar were to get dealt for pitching, there's a guy named Mike Moustakas who's sitting out there on the free agent market currently that is one hell of a ball player. He's a good third baseman. He's a winner. I mean, he was a force on those teams with the Royals, and he went over to the Brewers and had some good time there.
So that's why the Brewers almost went to the World Series, because they had Moose on their roster.
I think he doesn't get a lot of credit. I think he's a guy, if you look back to his 2017 numbers before he was a free agent, it's crazy how he didn't get a big contract. And I think he was kind of screwed by the free agent year last year. I do believe a lot of these teams were banking their purse to go out there and be able to spend this year. I mean, we're seeing some insane contracts with Corbin and McCutcheon, and like, people are spending money now. And I think that he just was unfortunately came off of that one season on a bad free agent market. But he's a very good player. And if you're to sign him for 2 to 3 years, like, if that's what it takes to sign that guy, one, you're signing him for way cheaper. And two, you have a lot of flexibility, because he can absolutely go over and play first base, which is a very big question mark at this point. I mean, we're going to go into the season, it seems like, unless something happens with Voit and Bird. And how many Yankee fans feel good about that? I guarantee the majority of them do not. If Andujar were to get traded for pitching and you sign a guy like Moose, you have a third baseman, and then you also have an option, you know, if he doesn't play third, or if you're to go after like an Arenado the next year, which is a very possible scenario, then Moose could move over to first base. So there's flexibility there, and I don't think it has to be Machado.
Well, you know how I feel about Greg Bird next year.
Yeah, you think he's going to be comeback player of the year, unfortunately.
Comeback player of the year. Yeah, in the International League. for Scranton. Yeah,
that's great.
But Moustakas, who's to even say he's going to get 2 or 3 years?
No, I said if you had to. I'm saying if the market were to fall and or to a point where Machado or Moose is out there and now you're seeing teams ponying up 2 to 3 years and that's what it takes to get him, I don't think it's that serious because one, he's 30 years old. He just turned 30. I think he's a lot younger than most people think. And he has flexible, he has flexibility with the defensive positioning. So I think he's a very attractive player. And he would freaking rake at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I think you want your left-handed bat helps him out a lot, yeah, especially power-wise, because his slugging went down this year. Kansas City's a big ballpark. Milwaukee, I think, is a pretty neutral ballpark as far as offense goes. But Yankee Stadium certainly isn't neutral. It's hitter-friendly.
Kansas City also lost a lot of players, too. Like, he was left to, amongst Salvi Perez, but a lot of those other guys were dealt. So they didn't have the same lineup. Hosmer was gone. I can't think of his name right now. The center fielder gone to
Kane.
So Kane was gone. So there were, lineup was a lot, wasn't as strong. So I think that also hurt him. But yeah, you want the left-handed bat. Everybody wants left-handed bat. Well, Moose is a pretty filthy left-handed bat.
All right, let's talk about Hap. I'm glad the Yankees got him back. Now I can still call him J-Hap and not Ja-Hap. I feel like that's progress for me personally. But 2 years, $34 million, which is $17 million a year, with a vesting option for the third year, also $17 million if he throws 165 innings or makes 27 starts in 2020. So there were rumors that he had multiple three-year offers on the table. I don't believe that, because if he had multiple three-year offers on the table, why didn't he take one of them? Why did he settle for a vesting option from the Yankees?
It could have been the team. It could have been a place that he did not want to go, and he knows where the Yankees are right now, and he wants to win a championship. And if it was close enough, then, maybe the Yankees were putting in a little bit more money per year. Maybe the average annual value was a little bit higher. I don't know. But the fact is he was, it seems like that trade was a very good thing for the Yankees because obviously J-Hap liked his time in New York. I got to believe that played some kind of a factor into his decision at the end of the day. But this is a great contract, I think, for both parties. The Yankees, I think it's a great contract because that third year is vesting with pretty significant starts. I mean, 165 innings on that second year and 27 starts. Like, if he does that, you probably want the guy back anyway.
Right. That means he's having a durable and effective season.
Yeah. So you want that guy back as probably your fourth or fifth starter at that point. So I think that's a very good thing. And J-Hap obviously feels confident in himself and his conditioning and how he feels. And I like that too, because that means he's betting on himself to an extent in that third season. So I like it. I like the move all around.
I like the move all around too. And it also shows that the Yankees, when faced with 6 years of Corbin, which was an overpayment, or Hap with the vesting option, they rather take the gamble on that possible vesting option with Hap.
Well, yeah. And the case that it's a 6 year deal and a 3 year deal. Like I understand the age problem here with the deal and the optics of this deal, but, and to say that at the sixth year of Corbin, he would be, J-Hap's age. Well, we know what
currently,
but we know what J-Hap is at 36 years old. We know he's an effective pitcher. We have no idea what Corbin's going to be at 35, 36 years old. No idea. And
we don't even know what Patrick Corbin's going to be if he were to have come to the American League next year.
Right. There were a lot of uncertainties. Now, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want the player. I did want the player. I think he would have been, I think the way his stuff plays, it would have been a very good fit for the Yankees. That being said, I don't think that this move is a bad move by any means. I think this is a move that absolutely makes the Yankees stronger. It solidifies them. It has J-Hap for a full year. People are like, oh, why does it make him stronger? He was on their team. He was a trade deadline guy. He was there for 2 months. And oh, by the way, he went 7-0. So you add some more innings to him as a New York Yankee in pinstripes. It's a damn good thing for the entire season. So
if Hap was on the Yankees for the entire season last year, and let's just play the game, Sonny Gray was not losing that every single time out in the first half, the Yankees maybe win the division.
I don't know if they're winning the division, but it would have been closer for sure. They still went through a lot of damn injuries.
And if you play out what the rotation could be next year, Severino, Tanaka, James Paxton, J-Hap, and then Sabathia plus Montgomery in the second half.
Yep.
Chance Adams is going to get a couple starts. Loaisica, Herman. A number of guys are going to get fifth starter, sixth starter swingman spots. That rotation is way better than it was in 2018.
My God, it's way better. And I think people are forgetting about Paxton, maybe because they haven't done the, you know, we haven't seen him put on a Yankee uniform, and it's just out of sight, out of mind at this point. But I said this last podcast, going into the season, many Yankee fans, the two moves that they absolutely wanted to happen were sign Patrick Corbin and re-sign Jay Happ. Those were the two big things. And I think a lot of people would have been really good with that. But the fact that they lost out to Corbin, didn't pay the money, and it was just money, and the whole luxury tax, that whole debacle with, you know, where's the justification? Why am I spending money on tickets when you won't go out and spend it on Patrick Corbin or Bryce Harper or Manny Machado? People are using all of that.
Or all of the above.
Yeah, or everybody. Then, you know, they got Paxton and Happ. Essentially, it's a wash. It's a very similar position where they're in if you're looking at those two moves as what you wanted to happen. So, and I don't think that Cashman's done. You know, I think it has to be the right move for the if they're to add another pitcher, but something in my gut is telling me that he's not finished with the pitching.
What also opens it leaves open the flexibility, because Sabathia's got one more year.
Yes.
So you're not locked into five starters in 2020. You're maybe just locked into to the four starters, so, or the three starters. So you have flexibility in it where you're not locking yourself into multiple years of Happ and multiple years of Corbin.
No, I totally agree, and that's kind of why I like the look. I don't like these 10-year deals. I mean, to be completely blunt about why I don't want to sign Machado or Harper, and I don't love the Stanton 10-year deal either. In fact, I think it's going to be a disaster at the end. But when you have, if you have more nimble contracts and more flexibility, to me, then you're able to pivot and adjust and make your team better on a year-to-year basis. When you're locked in for these 10 years, and I know it's a risk, and I know the other side of it's, well, you're getting an all-time player for 10 years and you're locking that guy up. I get that. But the fact that, the possibility that he's going to be that guy for 10 years, is the percentages are really, really low. And when you have more nimble contracts that you can move around and do things, to me, it just makes you more able to do things on the fly and make your team better every single year. And I think there's a lot of appeal in that. And that's why I like the Moustakas move, because you're getting effect when he's on the team in the current time, he's going to be a damn good player. You're not getting him for 6, 7, 10 years, but he's going to be a damn good player for the next 3 years.
One of those nimble contracts is what the Rays got Morton to. Charlie Morton signed 2 years, $30 million in Tampa. First of all, since when is Tampa signing free agents?
Right.
But second of all, I was shocked that he only got 2 years at $15 million a year. Especially when you look at Lance Lynn getting 3 years and $30 million. It's just hilarious that Lynn and Morton both get $30 million guaranteed. But I would have definitely been in on Charlie Morton for 2 years at $30 million.
I'm surprised they weren't. When I saw what that contract was, and because it was a 2-year deal, and Morton has experience with pitching out of the bullpen as well, like, to me, that's a guy that could absolutely be a swing guy. And if you're adding another starting pitcher with the current situation, like, to me, that's a guy that makes a lot of sense. Because, you know, if you're to go into the season with five starters, and let's say Charlie Morton was right there at the end with Sabathia, you're giving Sabathia the starts because that's what he does. He's a starter. But Morton's got the ability to come out of the pen and could be an effective guy out of there. So it was, when I saw that, I was surprised that he signed for what he is. You know, I guess people just don't believe in Charlie Morton at this point, and they think he peaked, you know, with the Houston spin rate.
Even if he did, though, like, it's not that much of a gamble.
Right.
It's and in fact, it's actually a pretty big gamble for the Rays, because they can't easily eat $30 million, but the Yankees, I mean, Steinbrenner shits that out every morning.
But the thing is, you're also looking at that as a 2-year deal. You're comparing it to Lance Lynn. I mean, it's a significantly different contract, because it's a, you know, average annual value. It's 50%. I mean, it's a big difference in cost.
I get it, but the difference in quality of pitcher is also huge.
I mean, I could see Lance Lynn going to Texas and winning 10 to 12 games. I could see Charlie Morton doing the exact same thing.
Lance Lynn had a 5+ ERA last year. Look, I would have been okay bringing him in for, I think I said 1 year, $5 or $6 million, as like an innings eater type.
Yeah. But it's Texas.
Are you kidding me? For the bouncer who smells like hot dogs?
They wanted, I'm just afraid of the snowman melting in Texas. You know, the guy is, he's going to.
Big boys don't do good in the heat.
No, they don't. Or he just, you know, maybe he'll lose some weight there. It's a nice little sauna for him. I don't really care about the Lance Lynn deal. I'm not even going to spend time on it. Honestly, it's whatever. It's $5 million or $10 million bucks, though, for a starting pitcher, a guy that can throw innings. That's what it is. He's eating innings. But Morton, 2 years. That's the thing. 2 years. And I think he got I mean, the contract's relatively close to what Hap got. If you're looking at the average annual value, 17 to 15, I mean, that's pretty damn close. So if you're looking at that, then Tampa may have paid a premium for the value per year, and he just wasn't getting long-term contracts. Or they were much, much lower in cost. Maybe he was getting similar to what Lance Lynn was getting, 3 years, $30 million, and Tampa said, you know, we'll do it for two.
Looks like Tampa now has a two-man rotation for next year.
Yeah. Well, it gives them that flexibility,
with
right?
Snell and Morton.
That's what's funny about Morton is it gives them the flexibility if they continue to do this bullpenning thing.
You know, I wonder if they approached him and said, you're not going to be a starter. You're going to be a guy who pitches every two or three days.
That could be, that it could be interesting. It really could. It's going to be Tampa, man.
They live lawlessly down there in St. Pete.
Damn. I tell you.
Who the hell knows what Kevin Cash is doing.
Yeah. And you know, maybe they got some leftover money that they didn't have to spend on the stadium. So they threw it threw Charlie Morton's way.
One of the guys that I had in my offseason plans was Adam Ottavino, a reliever from Colorado. I think he would be a great addition to the bullpen, but he did, he was talking and he said he could easily strike out Babe Ruth. They kind of went viral with his comments about dominating the great Bambino.
Yeah. It's just a dumb thing to say. It's him trying to get his name out there and talked about it.
It was a podcast interview, and they I only read the article. I didn't listen to the soundbite.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. It's stupid because it doesn't matter. Like the time, the difference in eras is such a big deal.
I think it will matter if the Yankees sign him and he struggles. It will matter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For him. Yeah, no doubt.
What, you said you can strike out the greatest of all time, but you can't even get out Eduardo Nunez on the Red Sox? What the hell, Ottavino?
Yeah, I know. He will get crushed in the media if he comes to the Yankees, because there will be times where he is bad and he will get destroyed. And then we'll see another guy who's a shell of himself because he can't handle New York because he's getting booed. And him and Sonny Gray can go walk.
I love this town.
Yeah, they could go walk into the sunset and play in a small market team. But he's from New York, isn't he? He's a New York guy.
Is he?
Yeah, he's from the area. I don't know where, upstate, I think, maybe, or Long Island.
I'm looking it up.
But he's definitely, I think he wants to come here. I think that's one of the...
Oh, he was born in Manhattan, born in New York City.
There you go. So I think Ottavino wants to be here, whether it's with the Yankees or the Mets. I think he wants to be in New York.
And he went to Northeastern in Boston. Interesting. I didn't know that. He's a good pitcher. Pretty good. He's actually, and when you think about his numbers, he was pitching in Colorado and he still had good numbers. So I do think he could be a very valuable bullpen option.
When you're looking at the bullpen for the Yankees, I mean, they're certainly not finished with what they're going to have for the bullpen. Zach Britton's still out there. Dave Roberts is still out there. Guys like Ottavino are out there. All the closers are out there essentially. So you have a lot of guys that are waiting for the first, you know, shoe to drop, similar to what the Machado and Harper are doing. Someone is waiting for that reliever market to get set so that these guys can start falling off the board. But there is a market out there with a lot of talent. And, you know, the Yankees, I think, will probably sign two of these guys at the end
of
the day.
Well, there's like a record number of relievers on the market.
Yeah. And two, two, I think, is the number. I think if they're to load up with two more guys, I think is a... would be a good target.
Well, I actually think there's 72 relievers on the free agent market. Normally there's about 30 to 40. I actually think that could be a good thing for teams, because that means I don't think prices are going to skyrocket. Because if you miss out on one guy, there's another guy waiting who's willing to sign.
And that's probably why they're all waiting. They're trying to hold off for one guy to get a good deal. They're waiting for one of the closers to get a stupid deal. Someone's going to pay, you know.
Well, Familia he went back to the Mets, and Joe Kelly went to the Dodgers. I believe both of them are multi-year deals.
Yeah, but those aren't closers. Those aren't the big names. Those guys are just, you know, happy to be there.
Familia was a closer.
He was a closer, but he's not going to be the closer. They just traded for their new closer. So Familia is going to be a bullpen guy. And I think that, you know, one, he's got familiarity with going back there, but it does bolster their bullpen. But I think some of these top level closers, I think Kimbrel being one of the biggest ones, who he's been asking for stupid money. They're going to see if he can get it.
6 years.
Yeah. If he gets the big money, then the other guys will obviously will drive it up. But they're trying to get that market brewing again, like it did a couple years ago when you have, you know, relievers signing, when Chapman signed. when you had Melanson, and when you had Melanson sign for stupid money in San Francisco.
That might have been the worst contract of that winter.
Yeah, that was a bad contract. So I think a lot of guys are hoping that this market does heat up. And shit, when you see what McCutchen got, and when you see what Corbin got, there's money to be spent. So.
Yeah, we talked about that all last winter. Our team's just waiting for the next year, and it kind of seems like they were.
Yeah, I think they were. I really do. McCutchen,
remember
that,
all of
the amount of money that McCutchen got is crazy to me.
You remember all the reports of collusion and that teams are conspiring against the players' union to bring salaries down? Well, that doesn't strike me so far with what's happened with these contracts. So.
No, it definitely doesn't. I don't think it is. I think there's just a lot of posturing as far as these two big guys and people are trying to line up their cards.
Yeah. We've got a couple mailbags to get to. Before that, though, I want to tell you guys about Robinhood, which is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. It is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. I know it can definitely be intimidating, but it's an app right on your phone. Scott, I know you like this app. You use it, so why don't you tell people why it's your go-to?
Yeah, no, it's definitely very easy to use. I use it as kind of a side account so that I can just get in and out of trades if I want to. It's definitely a good place to practice if you're trying to get into the market and you're not as confident. It's a place where you're not burning money on commission fees. There is no commission fee, no cost to actually make these trades. So it's a really good place to do that if you have some experience or if you're looking to get into it and you want to learn. It's a great place to do it. Other brokerages charge, I think, up to like $10 per trade. So that can definitely add up very quickly and can cut into either your profits or add to your losses. It's super easy to use. They have all the news for each individual, stock or crypto or whatever. So you can stay up to date with that. It's pretty much one app that gets you your trading and your news as well. And then, they have some indicators in there as well that helps you learn while you're doing it, while you can build your portfolio. So Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. You can sign up at bronx.robinhood.com. That's bronx.robinhood.com.
Okay, first up on the mailbags, we have two regarding Sonny Gray, so I'll read them back to back. The first one is from Greg at GBout35 on Twitter, and he says, Lance Lynn is a Ranger and injuries will most likely happen. Do you think Sonny Gray could be the best option available for the sixth starter / swingman? I know Cashman said he will be gone, but what kind of return can we realistically expect? And then Damian Foxton says, does it make sense to hold on to Sonny Gray until the trade deadline? Would he not bring a better return at that stage? He could be the swingman six starter till then to give, then giving him a chance to improve his stock in a low impact capacity. Cash giving him a chip on his shoulder might actually kick his ass into gear.
Okay. So people are going to hate me this guy. People are going to hate this.
We're going to say he's going to save 40 games for the Yankees.
This is not a popular opinion. And trust me, like I get it. I don't like Sonny Gray. He burned me terribly last year, both on this team and some
he's
of my predictions. He's an ass. Okay, I really think that he's just the worst. That being said, when I see what he can do, and when I see his road splits, home and splits, and I see where the Yankees currently stand by adding two or more of these pitchers, there is a very good possibility that Sonny Gray's value at this point is still on the New York Yankees. I actually am, as this goes on and we're looking at what's happening and depending on what he's able to get for him, I think that's obviously the biggest reasoning in this. It will be the biggest determining factor of what value can get. But both Greg and Damian are making a lot of sense because, listen, he's up for a new contract after the year.
He's going to get a raise in arbitration this year.
This year, yes, but he's looking for a new contract. Next year is a big year for Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray is going to either pitch well and try to earn more money for himself and his family and possibly out of New York by pitching well, or pitch well and stay in New York and prove everybody wrong, or return to the guy that we think is weak-minded, can't pitch in New York, and just fall back in line, but then do well on the road. He had some good moments in the bullpen. I think he showed that he could do some things out there. he gives some flexibility. And yeah, I don't think it could get much worse personally.
That was going to be my point, is that,
but he's got the talent. His value, he's got a talented arm.
Yes. Yeah. But will he have the balls to pitch?
No, he won't.
To pitch as a swingman / bullpen arm. Will he have the guts to actually perform in that role, or will he cower in the corner and never be heard from again?
See, that's the thing. If you're not getting a lot of value for him and he's not doing well in that role, then whatever. You get rid of him for the nothing you were going to get for him anyway. You know, you could trade him at any
point. It's going to be a flyer, fringe prospect from some team, like the number 9 guy in their system. It's not going to be anything good.
But when you're looking at the current situation right now, there's a 5-man rotation that's existing on the Yankees, right? They have 5 starters. So you're not looking for Sonny Gray to be that number 2-3 guy that we were all expecting him to be from the beginning.
God, no, he wouldn't even be in the top 5.
No, but now you have a guy that has theoretically a lot of upside. There's definitely the upside there if he were to ever figure it out. And be able to pitch at home like he did on the road. If you see some of those splits get a lot closer, then you're looking at a totally different story. It's a very low risk at this point because you're not banking on him being in the rotation. You're kind of getting what you get from him. And if it's good, if it is upside, then you can use him to, you know, where you need him in the pitching staff, whether it's in the bullpen or you do need that spot guy or swing man to go out there and throw innings. So I don't know. Look, I hate him. I do. And I hate saying this. I really do. But when I'm looking at value, and that's what I'm basing this off of, when I look at value and I'm looking at other guys that are out there and I'm seeing that he is now a controllable asset, you're either getting nothing for him, it sounds like Cashman's been asking for a good amount. And maybe that's because he thinks the same thing. The only way at this point he's going to get rid of him is if he actually gets more than expected. People are going to have to pay a little bit more to actually get him because he may be okay with sitting back and saying, okay, now I'm set with my rotation. Now this guy, anything he is either gravy or we get rid of him anyway.
But then I don't understand why he sat down in that press conference right after the season ended and said Sonny Gray is basically going to be traded.
There was no upside.
There's no benefit to that. He could have floated Sonny Gray's trade name in trades, which it would have been floated, but it wouldn't have been floated in that same way where the Yankees are now, the Yankees are in a bad spot once Cashman says that, because teams know that they want to trade him, whether Sonny Gray asks for a trade or Brian Cashman just wants him to get the hell out of New York. Either way, that's bad news for the Yankees because his value is going to come down. Whereas if Cashman just went to teams regularly, spoke to their GMs and said, Sonny Gray could benefit from a new change of scenery. Are you interested? Let's work out a deal. That might have been a better way to approach it.
I just don't think it mattered at that point because, one, my conspiracy theory, and I still believe it. I have no source or any other inclination other than my gut, and this is just what I think happened. I think Sonny Gray's agent floated that, and he said, "Look, we want to be traded." And at that point, Cashman, it didn't matter what he said. Everybody knew. Everybody knows the situation. They know they have a talented guy who pitched like dog shit in New York. They know that it's a known situation at this point. So I don't think whatever Cashman was going to say, like, people knew what was happening at that point. And right now, look at what they're, again, 5 starters already in. So we're in the same spot. Like, Sonny Gray doesn't have a position. He doesn't have a slot in the rotation at this point. So everybody knows they're looking for something for him. But right now, I think maybe Cashman can have a little leverage saying, well, I'm good on the fit on my starters, so I don't need to trade him at this point. Now I don't need to. You better overpay. If you want Sonny Gray, you're going to have to overpay for him a little bit. Otherwise, I got no reason not to just keep him and see what I can get. And maybe he's going to play his butt off and change that mentality. And then there's value. The value to me is now like him staying around and proving something, or somebody overpaying because they know that Cashman, is a crazy man with that it doesn't matter. You know, he's got nothing to lose.
Can Sonny Gray redeem himself in your eyes?
Yes, absolutely. So, look, again, nowhere to go but up with this guy. He can redeem himself in a lot of ways with Yankee fans. And, like, imagine Sonny Gray feeling good about himself and confident and in, like, the good graces of Yankee fans. What if he did that? What if that was, like, the comeback story of the year, that this guy came back and actually
Sonny Gray wins ability? Comeback player of the year, yeah, instead of Greg Bird?
But, again, the beauty is now there's no pressure on him. There's no pressure anywhere. So maybe that helps Sonny Gray.
Yeah,
maybe that's a good thing for his little weak competitiveness in his brain. maybe this is a good situation now, now that he's got nothing to lose, really. And just, you know, he's got to go out there and prove that he does have the best stuff in baseball, as he says. So who knows?
It's a
strange situation at this point. It really is. But I can absolutely see now that Cashman is almost back in a position of strength with him.
Huh. I don't think so, but...
I mean, not from when he was before, but from what he was 4 months ago, 3 months ago. With the rotation set?
You mean... do you mean during the season or after the season ended, after the press conference?
Right after the season. Yeah, 2 months ago. Sorry, we're almost in the third month. About 2 months ago. I'd say he's stronger right now because the rotation is set. Because he made those because he signed Hap and made the trade for Paxton. Now they don't need Sonny Gray. So now he's again in one of those positions where you got nothing to lose. And the guy who's got nothing to lose is scary. If he trades him, it's for something that he needs.
All right, Marcus, he says, I trust Cash God, but I don't appreciate the excuses he gives to not pursue Harper. Gardner will be a free agent after 2019, Ellsbury after 2020 with the buyout, and Frazier is not a sure thing. So none of these guys should block any outfield free agents that could make an impact for years to come. We already talked about that at the top of the show. But he asks, do you think Cashman is playing games with Boris, or is Steinbrenner trying to save some money?
I don't think he's giving excuses. I think that he's giving real reasons why they may or may not be going after him. I think that Harper is not a great fit for this team is a real thing. I mean, they would definitely have to make some move. They'd have to position things around him. But if they loved Harper, they would absolutely do that with pleasure. I think the 10 years is a big stumbling block. That's what I think. I think it's a big deal. If they are in on him, and I could absolutely see him not trying to give up his hand and do a little bit of posturing with Boris. I mean, all of these things I think are in play.
Cashman
doesn't like to show his hand.
Right. We have to remember that it's in Boris's best interest to have the Yankees involved, and it's the Yankees' best interest to say they're not involved.
Anybody who thinks they know what Cashman is really thinking right now is just speculating. Nobody knows. Nobody has any idea what this guy's thinking. He's not really going out there and positioning himself entrenched in a stance. He has gone back and forth because there's windows and doors open all over the
place.
Who the hell knows what happens?
He might have a plan, but will change his plan if an opportunity arises, yes, like it did last offseason with Stanton.
Right. Or as we talked about last episode with A-Rod back when he was signed. Things changed. Things changed quite a bit.
Who knows what's
went down
and
they needed a third baseman. You know, we don't know what's going on. Who knows? I mean, we could find out after Christmas that Didi, the surgery didn't go well. I mean, who the hell knows? I really hope not, but you just never know what can happen. So he's leaving the options there, and I don't think anybody knows what he's thinking.
Or Didi got the Evaldi bionic arm and is going to be ready for opening day.
Yeah. Well, you know, he better be. I think would not surprise me if Didi was
be throwing
ahead of schedule.
On our cutters over to first base. Yeah. I don't know if Voit and Bird can handle that.
Bird certainly can't.
Grant asks, his Twitter handle is @Divine_Callahan. He says, how come there's no talks on Marcus Stroman coming to New York? I think he plays as an exceptional starter behind Seve, Paxton, and Tanaka, and has proven that he's a big game pitcher. So Stroman is 27 years old with the Blue Jays, 2 more years of arbitration. He's actually from Long Island, which I was not aware of. He was unhealthy in 2018 after pitching back-to-back years of 200-plus innings. He was supposed to be the Blue Jays ace and did not have a good season last year. When he was healthy, he did not pitch well, and he also only pitched about 100 innings.
Yeah, we saw Stroman's been a guy that I think a lot of people have been on because he's from Long Island. I think because he's a New York guy that a lot of people have been on Stroman. Look, I think Marcus Stroman is an interesting player. He had a bad year. He's been injured. We saw him do amazing things at the World Baseball Classic. I think that's really when he was...
That's when he showed up on everyone's radar.
He showed up on everybody's radar. Well, people knew that he was a New York guy in Toronto. Like that conversation comes up quite a bit when he's pitching against New York. But he's a smaller guy. He hasn't shown that he can stay healthy. I think when he is healthy and when he's on, he's a very good pitcher. I love his competitiveness. But why are we not talking about him? Well, I guess because Toronto's not talking about it. Because
he hasn't been floated around.
If Toronto's not floating him as a trade guy, like why is anybody going to talk about him? He's on another team and is not a free agent. So no one's going to talk about him unless the Blue Jays are.
Would you trade Andujar in a package for Stroman?
Hell no. Stroman is not close to that guy. He's 27 years old also, showing the injuries off of a bad season.
I mean, 27 years old, that's how old Sonny Gray was when we acquired him with 2 more years of arbitration.
Yeah, but Sonny Gray was also pitching a little bit better. I mean, Stroman is showing some...
they're actually kind of similar, because Stroman is also kind of a smaller guy, right?
Stroman is he's smaller than Sonny Gray even. But he's, to me, those injuries...
He's 5'8". Damn.
Yeah, and I think that's a stretch. His injuries are way more concerning for me with the way that that he throws.
Yeah. All right, the last question is from at SportsFYI on Twitter. It says, assume we don't get Harper or Machado. What additional position players should they go after to solidify the roster? And he says, Gonzalez, Harrison, Lowry, Jeanette, Hechevarria, or someone else. We talked about your Mike Moustakas idea a few minutes ago. But
and that's really only a play if there is a third base opening. That's if Andujar is traded. I mean, otherwise, Moustakas is a pretty tough fit unless they're giving up on the first base guys we have in-house and they bring him in to play first.
Yeah, and you and I both agree that Hechevarria makes sense for the shortstop fill-in. I think he's the perfect fit for while Didi is out. They just need somebody to catch the ball. They don't need, like, with Tulo getting released from the Blue Jays, people saying, oh, would the Yankees be interested in bringing in Tulowitzki? First of all, the guy's not healthy. He can't play shortstop. But they're not. I do not want somebody of Tulowitzki's name to come in and fill in for Didi. I would be fine with Hechevarria.
You cannot bank on a guy like Tulowitzki to come in and be the guy to fill in for Didi. There's no doubt. You cannot look at him and say he's going to be an everyday shortstop for the beginning of the year. The Blue Jays just ate like $40 million.
$38 million. Yeah, to have him go away.
So something is going on there that is not maybe to the public eye, and he's doing workouts or whatever with other teams. I don't want the Yankees to sign him. It's just a move that doesn't need to be made, in my opinion. The Hechevarria, is a very good position player. We saw what he has at the glove. It's ridiculous. If Andujar is on this team and they don't make a major move for a third baseman like that, and he is playing third base, I think it makes a lot of sense to have a guy like Hechevarria to go in there and play shortstop and lock down, you know, at least that side of the field. With Andujar playing third, I think it's essential to have a very good glove. I mean, to me, it would be really, really rolling the dice if you have Torres over there and Andujar to start the season, because we've seen the amount of errors those guys had last year, and they're both. I'm not ready to call Torres a liability in the field, but he certainly has a lot to prove in the field too. So it would be a shaky left side.
Yeah, and I'd rather him focus on second base, but the question. Does ask about a couple of second basemen, Scooter Jeanette, who has been kind of rumored by the Reds that they might trade him. Josh Harrison, he had a bad year last year. He's 31. He had a 656 OPS in 2018. No thanks. Lowry's second baseman, 34 years old. So there's more second base options out there where if they want to go that route, they could bring in second base. Neil Walker's still out there.
Yeah. I think that there's a possibility too. I mean, look, we've all been hoping and expecting that Tyler Wade takes that next step. I mean, he's a natural shortstop.
How long can we?
No, I know, but he's still in play. So if you're to sign a guy that plays second base or has some flexibility, like, you know, or if you sign a shortstop and you want some more flexibility with a guy, like, he's a guy that has flexibility. If he comes out playing well in spring, who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if he were to come in as a utility guy. But that being said, like, Scooter Jeanette also does have some experience playing third base too. So, that's a trade if they're to go out there and I know Sonny Gray's name has been floated out in Cincinnati. Yeah. If we could get that going and, you know, maybe we add another, low level, cause I don't think Sonny Gray and Jeanette is an even swap.
No, it'd be probably a pitching prospect or something.
Yeah. Some low level prospect, plus Sonny Gray for a guy like Scooter Jeanette, you know, that'd be fun. Scooter Jeanette would be a fun player to have on this team.
He'd be one of those guys that I think fans would like too. Yeah. Just because his name is Scooter.
But at that point, like,
he could replace Ronald Torres for the team mascot.
The thing is, Scooter Jeanette's a much different player than him, though. He's got pop.
Yeah, I know, but he's got a funny name.
The fact that he plays second and third base, though, again, something with this roster would have to shake out. Like, something would, I think, be different because it still doesn't help your shortstop spot. So the fit there isn't great either.
You'd be having Glaber. Over it at
short at that point, yes.
Yeah. All right. That's it for the mailbag questions. Good questions this week, guys. We put out mailbag calls for mailbags on Twitter, and on Facebook every week. So make sure you're following at Yankees Podcast on Twitter and you join the Facebook group. Just search the Bronx Pinstripe Show, or you can go to, what is the URL? Facebook/Yankees Podcast.
I don't know what the exact one is, but just search
the Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook, and there's a ton of conversation that happens in there. A lot of good conversation, also some interesting conversations, some different ideas floated by people. But hey, that's Facebook. You can also submit them at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Scott, any last words?
Yeah, people are going to be traveling for the holidays coming up, so hope everybody is very safe and gets where they need to go, safe and sound. And we will have a show next Monday, which is, what, Christmas Eve. So lots of people, just be safe. And then look out this week for our the spring training information and then all of the BP crew events for next week. If you're looking for that last-minute gift, it's perfect. And we'll have it all up this week. So looking forward to getting those going, man, and getting some good crowds out. A lot of fun last year.
Good stuff. We'll talk to you Monday. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.